Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Just the Truth. Today we're going to be doing a deep dive into religious liberty and the Constitution. These are important questions on a variety of subjects when we look at what's going on in South Dakota with Governor Kristi Noem and the transgender bill that should be protecting women's sports. When we look at church closures amidst the pandemic, when we look at a lot of different things throughout the course of America's history, we need to know about the truth of the protections of religious liberty, why this was so important to our founding fathers, and how it's applied and should be incredibly important for us today. So joining me tonight is my very dear friend, CEO and president of Alliance Defending Freedom, Michael Ferris. So Mike, thank you so much. This is so exciting for me to have you on set. Thank you for being here.
Well, it's a great privilege to be with you. I have a father-type pride in seeing all the things that you've been able to do over the years. God bless you.
Thank you so much. And I was telling John, our producer, just before the show that's so true. I consider myself your 11th kid because you've been a mentor to me for years. You wrote the foreword to my book and have really championed my love of the Constitution. And so this conversation is so important to me because you've really been one of my professors for a long time, and you still are. So thank you for your expertise. And for the viewers who don't know about Alliance Defending Freedom and also don't know as much about your history and love of the Constitution, explain why you became a constitutional law attorney.
Well, I've been an attorney now for over 40 years. I started when I was 9. And I have been practicing constitutional law for virtually all of that time. I first started a state public policy organization that was eventually called the Bill of Rights Legal Foundation. Then I worked for Concerned Women for America for 6 years. I was the founder of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and defended the rights of homeschooling families for over 30 years. And then 4 years ago, as well as HSLDA, I was the founder of Patrick Henry College, which has the best moot court team in the country by a long shot. And I coached that moot court team to 12 national championships. And I also was teaching constitutional law while being the president and then later the chancellor of Patrick Henry.
And you helped me start the moot court team at Colorado Christian University.
I did, and they got to second in the nation this year. They did really well.
Which, thanks to your help.
So and then for the last 4 years, I was hired away from what I had been doing and became the president and CEO of Alliance Defending Freedom, which is by a good measure the largest conservative / Christian legal organization in the world. We have over 300 staffers with 12 offices around the world. We deal with religious freedom, right to life, marriage and sexual sanity, freedom of speech, and parental rights are the five issues that we focus on. So I have a big team and a great team, and we're the lawyers for Jack Phillips and Masterpiece Cake Shop, who's just finished his third trial yesterday.
We'll be talking about that soon in the show.
That's the way many people know Alliance Defending Freedom. We've done a lot of cases, but that's perhaps our most famous.
Yes, and everyone I think is familiar with Masterpiece Cake Shop. And you know, you mentioned Concerned Women for America. I just had Penny Nance on the program, and then you also mentioned HSLDA. I've had Mike Donnelly on the program. So you know, there's so many people who are invested in so many different areas of genuinely keeping conservatism. And I think that's important for a lot of people to know when they're seeing some of the discouragement, perhaps, and experiencing like with the Biden administration and all of these things, to know that there are champions and advocates like you and others that are truly focused on these issues. And the first thing that I want to ask you, Mike, is about Governor Kristi Noem out in South Dakota. You are a prolific user of Facebook, and everyone should follow Mike on Facebook, by the way, because you post a lot of your constitutional analysis on your personal page. And one of these has been with Governor Noem and her refusal to sign a bill that would protect women's rights and female athletes in sports. And of course, Kristi Noem has tried to backpedal her reasons a little bit. But I think people are genuinely confused on this issue because they like her as a Republican. They like her pandemic COVID response. So explain, Mike, the overview of why her rationale is problematic in your view.
Sure. Well, first of all, ADF has been defending women's sports for some time now. If you've heard about the case in Connecticut, where we are defending the girls who want to play girls' sports in Connecticut. And we're also defending women athletes at the collegiate level in Idaho. So all the female cases regarding transgender males entering into female sports, they're ADF cases. We've also built a coalition. We have 14 state attorney generals already who have backed us in these cases and are working with us. Similar legislation is passed in a number of states. And so when we went to South Dakota, they've started with our model bill on this subject to make it clear that both high school girls and college young women would be protected and they would not be required to compete against men. That bill we expected to sail through. It's a strong Republican state. And she promised to sign the legislation. So we thought, friendly state, great governor, this is going to be terrific.
No problem, yeah.
Yeah, and she promised when it passed the first chamber, she tweeted out, I can't wait to sign this bill. And then all of a sudden, Amazon weighed in, the NCAA weighed in, and she started changing her tune. And so basically, she is saying that the correct response to the bullying by the NCAA and by Amazon is to surrender for now, and we'll come back later. Now, when you're still in the game, you play to the end. You don't say, you know, we'll get them next year until you've lost. She is preemptively surrendering, and this will be disastrous for girls' sports all over the country. If they can get one Republican governor to give up, they will bully the rest of these people unmercifully.
Wow.
And so we absolutely must win this one now.
Yes.
So she's you know, we appreciate her past stance, but she needs to keep her original promise.
Absolutely. And I want to follow up on that when we come right back here on Just the Truth.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back to Just the Truth. We're continuing our conversation with Mike Ferris, who is the CEO and president of Alliance Defending Freedom. So, Mike, before the break, we were talking about the legislation that should be signed in South Dakota. And I didn't actually know that this was model legislation that ADF has passed already in how many states?
Well, it's passed in this basic form in Mississippi. A prior version was passed in Idaho, and it's being considered in many states. It passed the Arkansas legislature this week. I was there. It was earlier this week. Time flies. And it has not yet been signed by the governor. And so it's going in many states. And so the idea that we have to go off and build this coalition, that's our current excuse. We need to build a coalition. The coalition is there. We've built it. And yet she's ignoring us, ignoring our efforts to help. And she's just caving into bullies. I mean, this is really, really serious. While the Democrats are pushing the most egregious forms of everything they can think of in H.R. 1 and in the Equality Act, they're being bold. Republicans are timidly responding to things that should be very basic. And Republicans need to understand, if they want our people to support them, they need to deliver the goods. They need to actually stand strong and stand up to these bullies. I mean, we simply cannot let Amazon set the social policy of this country so they turn people into these compliant consumers that just hit the button and reorder some more stuff from Amazon while they govern the country. No, we need to have bold patriots who will stand up for what's right.
Absolutely. And I'm so grateful that you're doing that. And so you and Kristen Wagoner, who's another ADF lawyer, has she's been engaged on Twitter with this. And, of course, Kristi Noem put out a pretty lengthy excuse in, I think, your and my view about why she is sending this back to the legislature for some corrections. And she also went on Tucker Carlson's show last night, and she had this as her reason for sending it back. I want you to respond to this.
In the bill the way that it is today, and then also, but it wouldn't solve the problem, and that's the real issue. As I looked at the bill and examined it and have been discussing with legal scholars for many months on how to protect women's sports, this bill would only allow the NCAA to bully South Dakota, and it would actually prevent women from being able to participate in collegiate sports. So what I've done is I've asked the legislature through a style and reform.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but just for our viewers, I'm so sorry.
The bill.
Can you just back up for one sec? For our viewers who haven't followed this as closely, how would this bill prevent women from playing in South Dakota, if you would?
Because what it would do is it would put a law on the books that would allow the NCAA to take punitive action against our state. And we're a small state, Tucker. We've had to fight hard to get any tournaments to come to South Dakota. When they took punitive action against us, we would have to litigate. And legal scholars that I have been consulting with for many, many months say that I would very likely lose those litigation efforts.
So, Mike, she's saying that this is going to result in litigation. Oh, no, we have to send this back for style and form. Your response?
Well, first of all, she says she's been consulting with legal scholars for many months. She doesn't name them. The people who have been litigating these for many months is us, and she has not been consulting with us. If you really want to, you know, you're a Republican, you want to know the truth, about ask the people who litigate these cases. Secondly, a couple of weeks ago, she was in favor of this bill. So she's been in consulting with these legal scholars for many, many months. Why was she in favor of it 2 weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, and now all of a sudden she's against it? Did the legal scholars change their minds? What happened? She doesn't explain that. And let's be clear about whether women could play. Women will be able to play, and no men will be able to play in South Dakota if this bill is signed in its original form. What she's talking about is being able to host tournaments. That's tourism dollars that she's interested in, not sports opportunity. If you want South Dakota women to be able to play women's sports, you sign the bill so that they'll play all the games. Now, whether the NCAA brings the tournament to South Dakota, or they have to go to some other state to play in the tournament, that's the only thing that's issue here. And I think that we need to be able to stop what's, in any other context, what NCAA is saying, it would be called bribery, saying, we will not give you money unless you take official action in this context. It would be considered a bribe. Now, I've checked. It does not appear to be meet the bribe standard in South Dakota. But morally speaking, that's what's going on. And so, she's not being straightforward with the American people and with the people of South Dakota, and we deserve better. We deserve people
Absolutely.
Who will be truthful and who will be bold and strong. And she's not doing either of those things right now.
And I appreciate you calling this clearly, because we as conservatives need to be interested in conserving the truth and making sure that we're advocates for our rule of law and for ethics and equity and all of these genuine principles that are at the root of the biblical worldview of our country. And a lot of people that I've seen in response to the Facebook posts that I've made and even on her Twitter feed, they're saying, well, you know, we don't need to be divisive in the Republican Party right now. We need to go for the issues that really matter. And so what's your response to people who say, well, we shouldn't call out Kristi Noem because she's a Republican?
Well, if this issue doesn't matter, not much matters. Because the ultimate question here is it okay to believe that there's a biological difference between men and women? Because the left is trying to drive down everyone's throat the ability to say no one can disagree. We're not only litigating sports cases, we're litigating cases where people are being fired from their jobs as professors, as physicians, in other contexts, because they say, no, there is a male and female. God created male and female, and I'm not going to use the wrong pronoun. I'll call the person by their whatever first name they want to be called, but I'm not going to use the wrong pronoun, because that requires me to deny the reality of God's creation. And if God's creation of male and female is not worth standing up and fighting for, I don't know what is. It's I don't like face masks any more than anybody else, but face masks pale in comparison to God's created order, whether we're men or whether we're women.
Yes, and that goes into the Jack Phillips case, because that's something that you've been litigating for a while,
right,
of standing firm on the truth that marriage is between one man and one woman, and that we don't have to participate in a celebration of something that's a lie. And so where is that case in the midst of all this?
Well, in fact, the case, the round three of Jack Phillips, is a transgender reveal case. A lawyer who was a man, now says he's a woman, wants to have a cake that was one color on the outside and a different color on the inside to announce and celebrate his new gender. And, Jack Phillips will sell him any number of products, but he will not create for him a message, because it was clearly a message cake. He will not create a message that he disagrees with. And the First Amendment, freedom of speech, free exercise of religion, both should protect that. But if Kristi Noem gets away with this, Jack Phillips loses this, because, if they can be compelled to let men play sports, Jack can be compelled to declare this message. The churches can be compelled to organize their restrooms and their camps and their Christian dorms and colleges. All those facilities can be required to follow the politically correct agenda of the NCAA and Amazon and these corporate bullies. We've got to stand up for what's right, and we have to fight them at every turn and not give up on any of them.
Yeah, and so obviously you're not afraid to litigate these cases,
no.
And you shouldn't be, and you won the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. Do you think that that was, a lot of people said that that was too narrow of a decision. Do you think that that's something that needs to be broadened in terms of the protections, or where is this going from a litigation standpoint?
Well, we argued Masterpiece quite broadly. The court didn't rule as broadly as we'd argued, but we were glad for a 7-2 victory on the free exercise of religion, and saying that being discriminatory against religious people is an unconstitutional act. We had 7 Supreme Court justices, including Elena Kagan, join our majority in that case. That was a great victory. Now, we have other cases. We have the Baronelle Stutzman case pending before the Supreme Court right now, and she's the florist from my hometown. Her trial was in Kennewick, Washington. I graduated from Kennewick High School. Her trial involves her store in Richland, Washington. My family has owned a Christian bookstore in Richland, Washington until just recently, for decades. And so to say it's close to home is the understatement of the century. Baronelle served a man who was involved in a same-sex relationship for years, with doing floral arrangements for him. But when he wanted her to do her wedding, she took his hands in hers and said, "Rob, you know that I love you. I'll do almost anything for you, but to celebrate your wedding with you would require me to deny my Lord." And Rob said, "Fine." He expressed no ill will. She went to the florist that she recommended, but the ACLU got a hold of it, the Attorney General of the state got a hold of it, and they've been after Baronelle for close to 7 or 8 years now. And so that case may be the case that's been pending at the Supreme Court for a couple years now, may be the case that the court takes up to clarify this issue once and for all. They could do it through the Fulton case out of Philadelphia that's already been argued. But all these things are damaged by what's going on in South Dakota. If we give up, the damage is very, very difficult to overcome.
And so, Mike, if you were writing the Supreme Court opinion, and I've been a strong advocate that you should be sitting on the Supreme Court, we would be in a lot better position. But if you're telling the justices, here's the rule, here's the test, what would you like to see come from the Supreme Court?
Well, I would like to see that the freedom of speech and the free exercise of their religion both protect, in the Jack Phillips and Baronelle Stutzman kind of cases, both protect the right of people to not deliver messages, not participate in ceremonies that they don't agree with. That's on that side of it. On the transgender issue, Title IX of the federal civil rights law says that women's sports need to be protected. When you let men on the team, no matter what your excuse is, you're denying women the opportunity to compete. And that's the ruling that we would like to see in that zone, that women's sports are for women and only women.
Absolutely. And the only way that you get there is to litigate some of these cases. And so Kristi Noem should say, hey, have at it. We've got great lawyers at Alliance Defending Freedom who are willing to protect the integrity of this legislation and protect the integrity of women's sports. And when we come back, Mike, I want to have a broader conversation about religious liberty, the history and the context. There's no one better than you to explain it and to talk about that in context, especially for churches. So we'll be right back with more of Just the Truth with my good friend Mike Ferris, the CEO and president of Alliance Defending Freedom.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Continuing the conversation now with my friend, CEO and president of Alliance Defending Freedom, Mike Ferris, on the topic of religious freedom and why that's so important to analyzing all of these different policy issues, what's happening at the Supreme Court, what's going on with the pandemic response and church closures. This touches and concerns everything that we as Americans want to make sure is protected and preserved in terms of our fundamental unalienable rights that are given by God, our creator, and are supposed to be protected by our government. So, Mike, as we're talking about religious freedom in the context and the purpose of why that's specifically enumerated in the First Amendment, there are some people that would say, well, you know, religious freedom is either antiquated, it doesn't really mean what it means in the context of the Constitution, or they don't maybe properly understand how that's applied. So in terms of religious liberty as an overall topic, how do you define it in the context of the Constitution?
Well, there are two religion clauses in the Constitution. The one that most people are most familiar with is the so-called separation of church and state, really more properly called the Establishment Clause. And that clause deals with how much religious activity can the government do without crossing the line. The second clause is the one where I've litigated on the Establishment Clause in front of the U.S. Supreme Court and otherwise, but principally my career has been on the Free Exercise Clause, which is what religious people can do, and when the government tries to invade their space. And in that area, unless the government has a very overriding interest, such as human life protection, you can't do child sacrifice in the name of religion. If the government has an overriding interest and there's no reasonable alternative that is less restrictive on religious freedom, then people can obey God rather than man. So if, for example, when our family started homeschooling our kids 40 years ago approximately, we're violating the law of Washington State. We believe that God required us to teach our kids at home. And so the question is, did the government have a compelling reason to stop us? The answer was no, because the government's interest was that our kids become literate and self-sufficient. And we were able to prove more overwhelmingly that our kids were doing very well on both literacy and self-sufficiency and other academic measures. And so I litigated homeschool cases for over 30 years using religious freedom and won virtually all of them ultimately because we were able to show that religious freedom was not incompatible with the legitimate goals of the state, but some of the other goals of the state weren't all that legitimate. So the basic answer is you can obey God rather than man if the reasons are appropriate.
So when we're looking at this question in the context of the pandemic, that's right. been a lot of the debate, particularly around church closures, right. because people would say a reasonable alternative is to just do Zoom church or right. to say, well, we have to enforce masks and social distancing. So talk about that particular tension.
Well, the cases are currently being decided in a less than ideal environment because of a decision by the United States Supreme Court in 1990 called Employment Division versus Smith. And that decision led to the passage of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And I'm the guy who named it. And it's only because at the original meeting, nobody else had another idea for the name. And so, I won by default. But and I was the chairman of the group of lawyers who wrote it. And what RFRA did is to diminish religious freedom into a very, very small space, basically unless you can show that you're not being treated equally with other secular kinds of things, you can't win a religious freedom case anymore. Now, that should not be the way it's being decided, but that's current reality. And so the question is, were churches being treated fairly compared to Walmart and marijuana shops and all kinds of businesses?
In California, yeah. Strip clubs, right. And other things, right. That were businesses.
And we litigated the case in Nevada where the casinos got to open at a much greater capacity than churches did. Now, ultimately, we won that case in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and we had about 15 cases that we litigated, ultimately won them all, and we're still litigating. Some of those cases are still being worked out. But so under current procedures, we have to be able to show that churches essentially are treated unfairly. That shouldn't be the rule. The rule should be that the government must have a overridingly compelling interest, and there's no other way to accomplish its objective. And frankly, what I think breaks down here is the government really can't prove its science here. It's all conjecture. And until there's replicable science here, a proper analysis under the correct time-honored legal standards would be to throw all these cases out, because nobody really knows if masks worked. Nobody really knows if social distancing worked. It is just conjecture at this point. There are no double-blind replicable studies that support all the variety of things. There may be one or two aspects of it that have been tested properly, but the overarching thing is being made up on the spot. And governors should not have the ability to legislate. That's another constitutional principle. Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution, as you remember from con law class, is all legislative authority is vested in the Congress. And the same thing is true at the state level. Governors aren't supposed to be able to make the rules. Presidents aren't supposed to be able to make the rules. Ultimately, it's the legislative job, and that's not what's happening. So there's a whole host of constitutional problems with the way things are going, and ultimately, I hope this is all settled in an appropriate way. But churches, we've been defending churches. We have a ministry specifically for churches. It's a division of ADF called the Church and Ministry Alliance, and we're there to defend churches on any religious freedom cases, including COVID or transgender or LGBT issues or whatever it is that they're wanting to be able to protect their religious freedom. ADF is there to help them. So, you know, I would encourage any pastor or church leader listening to go to our website and look at our Church and Ministry Alliance program.
Yeah, and that's at adflegal.org. And I know my home church is a part of that, and that was a creation of yours when you came on to Alliance Defending Freedom to provide those protections for churches. And we were one of the first because it's a great, great idea. And so for some of the pastors that maybe are saying, well, you know, the Bible says that to love your neighbor, and what's the problem with Zoom church? And, you know, from both a biblical standpoint, because you're also a pastor, a minister yourself, and but also from a legal precedential perspective, why is that the wrong argument to just say, well, let's just let the government do whatever it wants?
Well, it goes back to the historical and biblical reason why we have religious freedom in the first place. And the reason is because God gives the soul of man to the individual, and it's a direct relationship with God. It is no jurisdiction of the government. The people that argued for religious freedom, I've written a book on this, it's called The History of Religious Freedom. 500 pages, 50 pages of bibliography, 50 pages of footnote. It is bulletproof. And the reason we have religious freedom is not the Enlightenment. It is ordinary believers who stood up for the principle that my relationship with God is between me and God. The government has no role. And so it's a lack of jurisdiction. The government is not assigned the role, either in the Bible, the Constitution, the common law, anywhere you look. The government doesn't have a role in what goes on in church or in the soul of man. And so the whole area of religion is beyond the competence of government. That's why we set it aside. The same thing is true about newspaper reporting. That's another First Amendment principle. Or television, this venue. You know, the idea that the government could shut down television news or, you know, the Washington Post or the New York Times during a pandemic, that's crazy talk, because that's a freedom. Well, so is religious freedom. You know, if you want the right comparator, You look at the New York Times offices, you look at the television studios. Did they shut the television studios down? No, they didn't. And so they shouldn't shut the churches down either, because one's a First Amendment activity, the other's also a First Amendment activity. All of them should be able to operate. And, you know, if churches want to, I mean, if they live in a, if they've got a elderly congregation, if they, you know, if they want to do social distancing, the issue isn't what churches should do. The issue is who decides what the churches should do. I'm currently an elder at our church at Cornerstone Chapel in Leesburg, Virginia. And, you know, our elder board, and not the governor of Virginia, should decide the policy for Cornerstone Chapel. And, we have done some common sense things. We just don't think the governor should have the jurisdiction to decide these issues. We should decide.
Absolutely. And so with that, that's only the perspective and only the protected right that we have in this country because of religious freedom. Right. So contrast that to maybe some of the other countries where there's persecution of the church, because there's another idea that's out there that says, well, you know, with persecution comes refining of the church, and we should allow all of this and not stand up for religious freedom, because then that will purify the church.
Well, ADF has offices all over the world, and we have a particularly large influence and a number of cases and lawyers in India, where religious persecution is extremely difficult right now. I can tell you right now that the persecution does have a refining effect on the church. I will also tell you those people want religious freedom. And the idea that we wouldn't want it, I mean, this, where the Spirit of the Lord, there is freedom, the Word of God tells us. The idea that people want that kind of thing so it can be refined, it just doesn't bear up under experience. And maybe, you know, somebody who visits one time, may get a wrong impression. I've been working on this as a lawyer, litigating these cases and helping others who are litigating these cases for about 30 years now, including I spent 11 years with international group out of Switzerland called Christian Solidarity International. I was their international vice president. Christians aren't inviting persecution. They want freedom everywhere. And all people want freedom everywhere. I mean, the UN Human Rights Charters, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, declares freedom as an unbelievable right. That's, you know, religious freedom is at the bedrock of all freedom. Without religious freedom, we really don't have freedom at all, and we certainly don't have America.
And so would you say in the last just about 30 seconds we have here that religious freedom is one of the rights that is going to be the most challenged in the current administration? Or is that something that we're kind of looking at some other parts and contexts overall?
I think that's the one that they're probably going to take on more than anything else. And we can, you know, expand on that, but they are taking dead aim at it in the Equality Act and many other contexts.
And including Dr. Rachel Levine, who is now, you know, the head of Health and Human Services. Yes. I want to ask you more about that. When we come back, I'm talking with CEO and president of Alliance Defending Freedom, Michael Ferris, who has done a lot of work on religious liberty and why it's so important to make sure that we are making the government do their job to preserve and protect our freedom and liberty. We'll be right back.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Back to Just the Truth, and we're continuing the conversation on the purpose, history, and application of religious freedom in the context of the First Amendment and why it's so important for you to understand why we need to fight for the correct precedent in the court, why it's important to stand up for the correct legislation, like coming out of South Dakota. And I'm continuing the conversation with Mike Ferris, who's the CEO and president of Alliance Defending Freedom. And right before the break, Mike, we were kind of getting into the conversation about the Biden administration and the distinctions here, very clear with who he is putting in his administration, particularly in the Department of Health and Human Services, where we have Xavier Becerra, and we also have now Dr. Rachel Levine, the first openly transgender biological man, not a woman. And you have some history with Becerra and that whole tenor of coming out of California. So I want to get your view on the NIFLA case, why that was important, that you personally argued, and what you think those appointments and those types of appointments signal from the Biden administration.
Well, Secretary Becerra was Attorney General Becerra when I argued NIFLA versus Becerra in the Supreme Court in the spring of 2018. California passed a law that said that pro-life pregnancy centers, there are two kinds of centers. One were medical centers where they had to advertise for free abortions provided by the state, either on their wall or in some other communication. And the non-medical centers had to give a different kind of disclaimer that was basically both of them together aimed at putting the pro-life pregnancy centers out of business. That's what they were really trying to do. And California, in its briefing, celebrated its progressive agenda. You know, this is what Becerra puts before the Supreme Court of the United States, saying this is a progressive, wonderful thing that we're doing of shutting down these alternative voices. And Justice Kennedy, who's been pretty progressive himself at times, wrote a concurring opinion in the case that we won 5-4, lambasting California's so-called progressivism. And so he said, freedom for differing views is extraordinarily important. And what California is doing here is stifling dissent, stifling alternative views. Justice Thomas wrote a masterful majority opinion in that case. And so I was, thrilled to have been able to win that. We won 5-4, so that was...
I'd like to think that I helped by the moot court prep that I got to participate
in. Yes, I'm sure. Yes, that was wonderful. And I had a lot of moot courts. But in any event, you can't find somebody that's more opposite of what we had with, Ben Carson and now to Becerra. Ben Carson saves babies' lives. Becerra celebrates his progressive nature when he's not only, advancing the right to have abortion, he's shutting down people who are trying to simply give people an alternative. That's his progressive values. And that goes with the Equality Act. The Equality Act probably is the biggest attack on religious freedom. And again, one of the reasons goes back to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which I know because I helped write it. RFRA says it sits on top of all federal law and provides, essentially a quasi-constitutional defense for any federal action unless the Congress goes in and says, in this particular area, religious freedom is not going to be protected through RFRA. Well, that's what the Equality Act does. And the whole area of sex and LGBT, both abortion-related issues and LGBT-related issues, anything to do with that sector, the religious freedom's thrown out entirely insofar as RFRA is concerned. And so they're taking dead aim at religious freedom because that's what's going on here. And so you have to say, is the Equality Act about giving people opportunities to do what they want to do? No. LGBT people have all the opportunities, all the services they need from people who are willing to provide them for them. This is about punishing people who don't want to participate. And that's entirely what it's about. It's not services. It is punishment and stifling dissent. And so and taking religious freedom out of there. Otherwise, why would you take religious freedom out? If you're just trying to get services for people who need services, you don't need to stifle religious freedom. But if you're trying to punish people, that's exactly what you do, because that's the core purpose of the Equality Act.
And that goes right along with cancel culture and what we're seeing in so many different ways to try to stifle the liberties and freedoms of people who disagree with the current trend and the current government. And so even with things like the Biden administration putting people in place like Becerra and putting these types of executive orders that are out in just the first couple of months of his administration, for people who want some encouragement, I think, what are ways that people can get involved before potentially they need Alliance Defending Freedom? But what are some ways that the average individual can participate?
Well, the first thing I would say generally is people need to get together and form coalitions and work in concert. There's so many times we think that we can do things alone. And so I would encourage you. I just spent some time in Florida with a man who's motivated to organize his county to take back his county for right-thinking principles. And I would encourage people to do that kind of thing, because it's, you know, yes, we should write letters. Yes, you should call your congressman. Yes, you should call your city councilman. Yes, you should vote for the right kind of people. Yes, you should volunteer for campaigns. Yes, you should donate to organizations that are fighting the right kind of causes, both politically and legally. But you need to get together and you need to start some stuff. And if you're just taking back your city, you're doing a big thing. And so I would, you know, people who want to do what's right, start locally and organize a group and get something done in your community. That's what you should be doing to really fight.
Yeah, and so what does that look like, I guess, for somebody who's sitting there going, yes, I really want to do that? What are some of examples how people have run successful coalitions locally?
Well, I mean, I saw you. The way we got to know each other is we were going back and forth on Facebook, and you said, well, why don't we go teach people, you know, yes, about these constitutional issues? I said, well, Jenna, you go organize the conference. If you get at least 500 people, I'll come and teach it with you. Well,
you
brought 750 people. It was one person. You got 750 people to come, and you and I taught them for a couple of days about the Constitution.
And 2,000 online. And 2,000 live streamed.
Yeah.
Shout out to my dad.
That's what one person can do. And so people need to be able to, you know, organize things and work together. Get your pastor involved. You know, go ask your pastor if you can be the civics representative for your church and gather good information from groups like Family Research Council, from ADF, from Concerned Women for America, from Heritage Foundation, and take that to your pastor and get snippets of that to people in your church. That kind of thing anybody can do.
Absolutely. And that sounds a lot like a lot of these other organizations that are already part of church. You know, all of these different clubs and things. Like, I know my sister-in-law is part of MOPS and, you know, all of these, the moms meetings, and you have Bible studies, you have all of those things. So it's not actually different than having those types of clubs for education purposes on civics. And I've seen, Mike, especially since President Trump, and seeing the investment that he made into people who want to participate in civics, and he brought this to everyone's attention, there is really a hunger from a lot of people that they want to know about civics in their own society.
Yeah. Well, I did a video series on the Constitution called Constitutional Literacy, which a lot of groups have played. So if you want to do something on education, go get my Constitutional Literacy DVD series and show it to people in your church or your Tea Party group or whatever you've got. That'll work. I'm working on a civics curriculum right now to be able to do that as well. But yeah, people need to know both how the government works and should work, and they need to know the issues. That's part of what I'm going to do, is teach apologetics about the issues.
That's fantastic.
So people need to study and they can learn. And it's really important that you dig in and get something
and
done.
And no better teacher, I will tell you from my own personal experience, than Michael Farish. So definitely get all the resources, his books, all of those things. And we're going to be right back to address one more topic with Mike Farish here on Just the Truth.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And the time always goes so fast here on Just the Truth, because I have such wonderful guests like Mike Farish, the CEO and president of Alliance Defending Freedom. And Mike, we've been talking about all of these constitutional issues and how people can get involved. And that, of course, leads us to the question that everyone's asking, is how can they get involved in election integrity? And I want to ask you about that subject matter specifically, because a lot of people really don't understand what the Constitution says about federal elections, specifically the Electoral College.
Well, the Electoral College is governed by the provision that gives exclusive authority to state legislatures to make the rules for picking the electors. And so that means for presidential elections, effectively. And so the problem with the last election, from my perspective, I think the Texas case argued the correct things. It came a little late, unfortunately, and there was a lot of issues, but I think they had the correct legal theories, and that is that what happened is that courts don't have the authority to set the rules; legislatures do. Secretaries of state can't change the rules midstream. Only legislatures can change the rules. And so we need to make sure that legislatures are taking actions right now to make sure that the elections, like Georgia passed a good bill today. But the basic problem, from my perspective, was the mail-in ballots. That's what I think was the most problematic, because you put boxes out in parking lots and you dump as many ballots in as you want. And then you say, we're not going to follow the rules created by the legislature on ballot security measures to check the signatures on the ballots to see if they're valid. Well, you open a Pandora's box when you do that. That was the problem. And you couldn't prove election fraud until you could get all that stuff out. And so I think that the basic issue needs to be the legislature needs to tighten all that up on mail-in ballots. And what you want to make sure is that if you're going to use mail-in ballots at all, you absolutely check the signatures and you provide true bipartisan review of the signature verification process. If you do that, you'll cure the vast majority of these problems. And so citizens need to be going to their state legislators right now and insisting that we have fair and open elections and clearing up this whole business of the mail-in ballot thing. That, to me, is the central problem.
Yeah, and President Trump was saying that from even as early as February of 2020, saying that, this is going to create mass chaos and irredeemably compromised elections. And so when you look at what happened in 2020, when there wasn't this type of audit, when you didn't have the signature matching, when you didn't have all of these checks that should have been there, constitutionally speaking, when, and I was obviously there in the state legislatures, right, telling them what their constitutional authority was and is. And so how can state legislatures for the Republican-controlled one, and you're right, this should be bipartisan, because free and fair elections are a hallmark of our society. We right. get to select those we put in office. But for state legislators, what do they need to know about their authority when there is a corrupted election?
Well, I mean, the time to fight is ahead of time.
Yes.
And so we need to pass good laws now, and we need to put the ability to bring pre-election challenges to anything that is going to change those rules. That's the key thing right there. Having clean election challenge procedures on the backside is always going to be the hardest part of it. But there were 300 cases filed by the left challenging election integrity rules ahead of time. And we got to make sure that the Republican attorney generals and other conservatives are stepping into the fray and making sure that that's not gone unchallenged. That, our friend Ken Cuccinelli is working on that. The Heritage Foundation is working on that. Others are going to do it. And I'm glad that somebody is going to be addressing these issues, because it's absolutely crucial that we meet these election issues ahead of time next time and not get caught behind the, trying to litigate things afterwards. That is the hardest thing to do by far.
Yeah, of course. And that makes sense, because, it's much better to prevent a car accident than try to clean up and, reconstruct right. the car after the fact. And right. so that just makes sense from a practical standpoint. But of course, the left always says, well, this is about disenfranchising people. This right. is about, all of their talking points. What's your constitutional response to that?
Well, I only want to disenfranchise people that are not entitled to vote, including the second time they're trying to vote, or the third, or the fourth, or the fifth. And so no one is going to be disenfranchised if we simply say, let's have proper registration, proper voting. Let's make sure you sign your on this enrollment sheet when you go in to vote, if you're going to be in person, or you're going to sign when you're going to mail something in, and people can verify your signature. Now, there may be some other ways to verify the identity. I mean, I would like to see people have to create passwords.
Right.
But you have to use the password to cast a ballot. Now
And you would think that would be such a not complicated thing. I mean, even just for people who, want to get their Netflix account, you know, that's worth, $8 a month.
Right.
It's password protect, right?
Yeah.
And so
I can't make a haircut appointment without a password.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's a requirement, then, requiring a password. But some form of ballot integrity, whether it's passwords or good signature requirements, but it just simply we want to know the people who are entitled to vote, register to vote, the people who have voted were the people who they said they were. That's it. That's the only thing that anybody legitimate wants. And if we can do those things, then I trust the American people to elect good people more often than not.
Yes. And I think the hope here for a lot of people is that there are a lot of efforts that are out there that are pursuing what needs to be done in these states. And of course, you know, here on Just the Truth, we'll be talking about that a lot more as the show continues. And so Mike Ferris from Alliance Defending Freedom, your website is adflegal.org, and people can sign up on for their churches as well with the Church Alliance. And then also you go to adflegal.org if they want any of the legal services and so forth. But thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real privilege for me, and thank you so much for the work and also for the investment that you've given to me personally.
I'm very proud of you, Jenna. Keep it going.
Thank you so much, Mike.